Yes, welcome back to the Bus Boss Scottish Football Podcast with me, Hamish Carter. I will waste no time at all tonight with a daft intro, and instead I will introduce Callum Scott. How are you, Callum?
Delighted to be back, Hamish. Thanks again for having me, as always.
You say that every single week, delighted to be back.
I know. Hello, hello, it's good to be back, as always.
On that subject of hello, hello, Callum Fisher with us as well.
I don't know what you mean there, Hamish, but thank you very much for having me back. It's a good weekend. Rangers won. The NFL is back for anybody that cares as well, so I'm in a good mood, and in contrast to our last podcast, which was dour as fuck, pretty much.
What's the crowds like at the NFL? Because I heard Neil Lennon go on about the fact there was 20,000 at a game on Thursday or something.
I think there was like 15,000 in the Kansas City game on the Thursday, but they were talking about that because obviously Jason Leach does a kind of spot on off the ball, and one of the questions put to him was about how Lennon said, "Oh, how come they can't have fans over there? Oh, sorry, they can have fans over there, but we can't have fans in here." And Jason Leach went, "Well, their mortality rate is the same as our case rate," so he's like, "That probably shouldn't be taking any lessons from there." But kind of widespread throughout the NFL, there's pretty much no fans in the stadiums, but apart from Kansas City.
Crazy. We could maybe have a chat at some stage if we have the time about just fans getting back to games. You weren't on, Casey, were you earlier on last week? Because we had a chat about getting fans back to games. It was just a kind of depressing conversation.
Aye, well, to be fair, I mean, it's even the weekend there, I don't think the test events went too well either. I mean, like I don't know, like, obviously, statistically, they probably went all right. But I mean, like, the Celtic Ross County game, when I caught the highlights, it was depressing to watch. Like, it was worse than I remember it. There was something dead odd about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I thought maybe something to do with the lack of crowd noise and stuff, but obviously it wasn't on Sky, so obviously that's a factor there, but there was just something really didn't sit right with me with it.
Aye, it's I found it pretty depressing. I just think 300, why not try and get more than that? And what are you learning by getting 300 fans into a stadium pathology that holds 22,000 or something? It's depressing stuff. Anyway, yeah, we'll move on to the action from the weekend. Before we do that, just want to quickly wish Craig Gamble all the best and a speedy recovery. I know he'll be listening to this, so we're all wishing you the best. Craig, moving on to the weekend stuff. Obviously, all six games played at Saturday at 3 o'clock, which I thought was a bit strange, but it made for a pretty decent sports scene, but it kind of cheered my mood up a wee bit because I was struggling a bit in last week's pod. Where do you want to start then? Anyone get any daft kind of thoughts on any weekend stuff that they particularly want to hear right now?
I'll let KC go first because there's probably a lot to get off his chest about a particular game.
I heard yous weren't that bad.
We weren't that bad.
I saw the word impressive next to Kelly.
I mean, it's one of those. It's totally been the story of our season so far. We're like, the only game we've really properly been outplayed and no deserved anything was Rangers at Ibrox. Absolutely no complaints to that. We're lucky to only beat 2-0 in the end. But we've played all right. I've seen us play worse at Pataudry. We've got an absolutely shameful record against Aberdeen. 1-1 in 28 since Derek McInnes has come in. And I honestly just, I don't know how to put that in words, really, considering how good our record has been against Old Firm, you know what I mean, the last couple of years. It's really, really concerning. We're all right, but it's just the difference. I mean, Aberdeen obviously take their chances. It's a great finish for McCrory as well. I've got to give him that. Obviously, almost in a half volley, ball coming in, going across goal, weak foot and that. So it was, like I say, very good finish for their point of view. But I don't know, it's been really frustrating. And I struggle to see the evidence that Alex Dyer will turn this team around. We need to remember that it's not just 6-7 games into a season. Dyer's been in the job for December last year. We all know, obviously, the pandemic hit, season get cut early, but he's had more than enough games, I think, now that he's potentially managed more games than Alessio as well. So, I'm struggling to really see when we turn the corner.
Well, that's my two questions. The first one is, are you in a better place than you were under Alessio? And my second point is, like, is this team just about to turn a corner? Because I've seen it so many times, you get good results. Like, you see when you beat Rangers back in February or whenever it was, I honestly thought Kelly were going to kick on. He's had your next home game, I think, was against Hibs, and it just never happened. And it feels like the whole thing with Alex Dyer is he's just, like, nearly there. Like, you go and beat Dundee United 4-0, which I thought was an unfair score, but you still won 4-0 against Dundee United. Next game, just, it's Aberdeen away, but you just think, you just want a wee bit more for your team.
No, absolutely. And to be fair, I mean, we're in a better place under Alessio. It's hard to tell. I mean, to the naked eye, Alessio get sacked when Kelly were in fifth place, you know what I mean? But
I
don't think we'd won in five games, and you knew it was a sinking ship. As ridiculous as that sounds, we were in fifth, but I mean, I think a couple of more defeats we would have went further down. I don't doubt that would have happened. It was just clear to see that the players never took to Alessio. He was hated, as far as I've led to believe, and the players just never got behind his ideas, and the board never backed him properly. In the transfer market, he signed a whole heap of players, but a lot of them only has signings. So we're definitely in a better place. But under Alessio, as I said, it was already going south for there, I thought. To be fair to Dyer at the beginning of this season, I mean, I really want him to do well. I really like the guy. I genuinely do. And it's not the whole Gary Locke, oh, good football man. I've done notice how much I hated Gary Locke for the word go at Kelly. But Dyer, he's been here long enough, man. He's been here for 3 years. He knows the club inside out, knows the players. Still, something's just no happening. But to be fair to him this season, yeah, that's us now. We've probably had the toughest running fixtures out of any of the teams. That's us played the full top four, I think maybe the top five with the way the table sits just now. Played Rangers, Celtic, Aberdeen and Hibs. We played Aberdeen and Hibs away from home and Rangers away from home. So you take that into consideration, we've got to have a run of games now. Obviously, I think it's Aki's next week, and then it's maybe Livingston and Motherwell, something along those lines. So they're all games that we should realistically be looking to pick up points from. Ross County and St Johnstone games were disappointing. The fact we get in front at Dingwall and then lose the lead, that's, but it's still a point up there, isn't it, a bad result? And then the St Johnstone game, we absolutely battered them, and you come out of that. But that's, as you said, Hamish, it's almost nearly there. But when are we going to get there? We can't just keep one win every five or six games. It's just really no good enough in relegation form. But I will give them the next couple of games. I want them to do well. If we can pick up 6-7 points for these next three games, then we'll high up the table. I think there's only 3 points that separates 5th from 12th now, so a couple of wins you're in the top 6. So I'll give them the next 3 games, then I'll have more to say about Alex Dyer's career at Kilmarnock.
You've summed it up there. I mean, you're 3 points behind 5th place at the moment, and you've got a much better goal difference than 5th in the league, 6th in the league, 7th, 8th, 9th. So obviously courtesy of that 4-0 win mainly against Dundee United. So you're effectively, you've only conceded one more goal than you've scored, and considering you've played all those teams, it's not bad. Obviously football comes down to more than that kind of thing, but so your next 3 games you've got is Hamilton at home, St Mirren away, Motherwell at home. Is it fair to kind of say that those 3 games could spell out his future career at Kilmarnock?
Absolutely, and it's a great opportunity to try and put a wee kind of run together, because as I said, on Saturday at Aberdeen, we were fine. We're sitting watching that. We weren't really outplayed. I think probably a draw would have been a fair result, but we didn't get the draw. So these games, as I said, we should really, minimum 6 points, I think. Like, that's got to be the minimum. Under Steve Clark, you'd be wanting 9 for that. Even when you didn't need the points, but we do need the points now. So I'd say 6-7 points has got to be the target. I don't want to see us lose any of the next 3 games. But equally, if it's 3 draws, that's not good enough either, because we need to make ground in these kind of teams. But what we're starting to see now is both your St Mirren's, Ross Counties, whoever they was raving about at the beginning of the season, they're already falling back down. And I did call that at the time. I mean, they did have a relatively good start, but they've not played the calibre of teams that we have, really, I don't think. So we've got a wee chance now to try and get some points on the board and start kind of looking at the table. But it all has to start with a win on Saturday at home to Hamilton. If we don't win that, then there's something really concerning.
Yeah, just moving on to Aberdeen, that's 3 wins in a row, five wins in a row for them. 4 of them have been clean sheets. Ross McCrory got the winner there. There was obviously a lot of kind of crisis talk about Aberdeen at the start of the season. I think their defeat to Rangers coupled with the 8 guys going to Solbar that very evening put them in a bit of a shit, but they've really like turned things around, and I suppose Derek McInnes deserves a lot of credit for the way he's turned that team round, and they're grinding out 1-0 wins like nobody's business. And just looking at their team again, like there's a lot of talent in that team. Like, I think Ross McCrory's a brilliant signing, really good finish for his goal on Saturday. Scott Wright, I think's grown into a player as well. And I think when you look at Aberdeen over the last few years, they've been a team that's been stale. Like, it's been the same players. It's been Niall McGinn. It's been Johnny Hayes, albeit he went to Celtic, but even prior to that, those same players for years you've been relying on, the same defenders, Scott McKenna, Considine, and I feel like now for the first time in a few years they've got Scott Wright, they've got Ryan Hedges who looks like a good player, they've got fresh players there, Fisher.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously you've got kind of Marley Watkins there as well, Matty Kennedy who came in January, and obviously Sam Cosgrove still out injured, so I think it did look to a lot of people, probably just because of the situation around the club and obviously losing to Rangers in the first day of the season, as if, you know, maybe this was going to be a struggle for Aberdeen. But having looked at the squad at the start of the season and indeed in the kind of predictions that we did, I always thought that they would eventually prove to be kind of best of the rest, if you like. I know Hibs have had a very good start, but Aberdeen, I mean, if you look at the table, obviously, are a point behind Celtic, having played the same amount of games. And I think at this stage, after, you know, obviously they should have played more games, but after the five games that they've played and having won four of them, I mean, that's a really solid start, coupled with the fact that they've got through in Europe as well. Obviously, it remains to be seen how they do this week. But I think, and I'm one of the people that thinks actually for Aberdeen to continue to kind of improve as a club, that maybe it is time that they part ways with McInnes, but I could be getting proven completely wrong this season if they continue with this form, because, as I say, they do have some exciting players there, and they've gone and they've shown that they haven't let, I mean, as bad as a start to the season as you could have, with obviously eight players in the news for reasons other than football, and then obviously losing to Rangers, and they were really, really poor at Pittodrie that day as well. So losing to Rangers and then that, I mean, to come back and win four games in the bounce is credit to them, and credit to McInnes, because he's got them playing in a way whereby, you know, they're looking comfortable in games. I mean, I know Kilmarnock did have their chances, and the Hibs game was kind of back and forth a little bit, but, you know, you couldn't begrudge Aberdeen any of those victories, and I think credit goes to the players and, as I say, Derek McInnes on that one.
Hamish, just quickly before we move on with Aberdeen, I commented this on Saturday and I was watching the game, but talk about their squad, I mean, look at their bench on Saturday. I mean, you've got Shea Logan, Ojo, Main, McGinn, Taylor, McGeoch, McLennan, Cherney, Bruce Anderson. Every single one of those players is good enough to play in the starting 11. And that's what you look at. I remember seeing their bench thinking, geez, like, every single one of their players is could start. Even Cherney. Cherney's a good goalkeeper at this level, where he was before at Aki's and stuff. So they've got strength and depth there, and they can mix it up. Because Kelly fans were all greeting about, oh, McInnes minging football, oh, we take that. I'm like, honestly, bewildering. McInnes's game management Saturday was different class and all, because Fulton Moon said, oh, he finished the game with six defenders in the park. What happened? There was 5 or 6 minutes injury time. We didn't create a chance. We had a wee bit of pressure. We tend to go. Then the injury time came up, McInnes made a couple of subs and just killed the game. But that's what you want. Like they were in no pressure whatsoever for those last 5-6 minutes. And as I said, credit to them. Game management was top class.
Yeah, the next three league games, Motherwell at home, Ross County away, St Mirren at home. I mean, you could see them taking 9 points for that, if we're honest, or at least 7 maybe. And that would put them in a really good place. We're obviously praising Aberdeen. I don't want to go too overboard, because for me the big thing we'll still to find out about this kind of new look Aberdeen is how they play against Celtic or Rangers. Obviously they played Rangers already this season, but that was a kind of Aberdeen team in crisis, it seemed. So they've got Celtic at home 24th of October. I think that's your real moment when you'll find out whether this is, you know, a new Aberdeen under McInnes, or whether it's that same kind of, you know, standoffish performance and Celtic roll them over and score 3 or 4. I think that could be the time to find out whether this Aberdeen team's the real deal, but they're certainly doing well at the moment. And obviously Europe as well, they've got Viking FK or FK Viking from Norway away from home. That's a pretty tough game for them. Viking are currently 8th in the Norwegian top flight, and I think there's sometimes a tendency to look at European teams and think, oh, that's a really tough game, but 8th best team in Norway, you would hope that Aberdeen could see them off, even away from home.
Absolutely. You've got to hope that. But it's just one of those, all these one-off games. I mean, it's a cliche, but anything can happen. and they're no mugs. They've got European experience, you know. Vikings, Tavana, Kamala played them in Europe. That was their last game in Europe before Connors Key was Viking back in 2001, I think. So they've been there or thereabouts, always kind of in the preliminary or early stages of kind of UEFA Cup, now Europa League. So they know their way about Europe as well, but so do Aberdeen. Consistently played in Europe for majority of my lifetime. So we've just got to hope that Aberdeen do their business and keep improving the coefficient.
Definitely. Fisher, where you want to go next from Saturday?
Why don't we go to Livingston v Hamilton then?
It was an 18-year-old scored the winner here for Hamilton later.
Brilliant
on.
Header as well.
Great ball header. For Templeton. I know, it was impressive.
Yeah, I was really... I was just going to say, I was really impressed with David Templeton. Everything good that Hamilton did on Saturday seemed to go through him. And I know, obviously, when he was at Rangers, he had his injury difficulties and he had a bit of issues after that, trying to get fit and stuff like that. But when he's been at Hamilton, he's been really, really good for them. And again, as I say, on Saturday, was really impressed. He seems to be their talisman. And everything good was going through him. So for me, that just watching the game kind of back, it was Templeton stood out for me. But Hamilton, overall, again, proven us wrong, which is it's going to make a few of us in this podcast, me included, look rather silly, I think.
They're proving everyone apart from Andrew Gamba wrong, because I can sense Gamba... his presence here right now, and he's just saying, I told you so, because he always says Hamilton, they just always find a way. And I think part of it's a joke for Gamba, but also part of it's very serious. They're a massively frustrating team for me, because I'm not being funny, I think they're crap. Like, I genuinely look at their team, and I just think they've got a lot of like really bang average players. Like, I don't want to completely belittle them, but players like Scott Martin and that, I don't really see any quality in them, but I don't know what it is. I don't even think Brian Rice is a particularly amazing manager, because like they did the same under Martin Cannon. Like, they just do this. It's almost like the club's ethos rather than the actual manager. Maybe that's harsh, but again, they're doing it, and they've won now two out of the last three. They've beaten Livy and Motherwell away from home. That's what, third for last season and fifth, I think, Livy finished away from home. They've both been like last gasp victories, but that's still a win. So it's crazy.
No, 100%. As you said, they always seem to find a way, but in they're currently proving if they're on the now. I didn't tell them to get relegated because of that theory, but I do think, like, not that they've ever been awash with quality, and I don't mean that in a bad way. They've also had a team of grafters and then the odd wee player here and there, like your David Templeton's, it's a kind of talisman. But this year, I mean, like it's bare bones stuff. But they always seem to bring through all these quality youth players, which obviously I'm a big fan of. I really like Lewis Smith and stuff. I think he's a cracking player. But I did think this year, looking at it, I'm thinking, right, because I was worried for us, thinking, right, can we get in? But I'm like, squad by squad, like Ackies have got to go. Like, there's no way that they should ever stay out with that squad. Because even last year, I liked a lot of their players. I liked big George Oakley and that. I thought they were all good players. And so, I don't know. It's an interesting one. But as you said, they're two massive away wins as well. People, obviously, Livy playing Astro, but everybody goes on about the whole factor about Ackies. Oh, well, they've got the plastic patch, but it's two massive away results. And I say credit where it's due, but hopefully they don't continue that form coming into Saturday when they play us.
Just that strike force they had on Saturday, David Moyo and Marius Ogpo. It's like, my word, like, that strike force is winning an away game in the top flight, albeit none of them scored, but... worried about Livy at all, Fisher?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, on the last podcast that we did, I thought this would be a kind of get right game for both teams, and you know, the team that wins, obviously, as we've just done, you can talk positively about, but then the team that lost, you're probably slightly worried. And Livingston certainly, in the regard that since they've came up back up to the top flight, Livingston have always kind of quietly just gone about their business, have shown up really well in the bigger games against Rangers or Celtic, but they've got crucial results against teams that you kind of need to beat to make sure you're safe. Not only that, obviously, but they were challenging kind of middle of the table and trying to get into the top six as well. They've kind of, you know, they've only got one win, two draws and four defeats, sitting there with Motherwell and obviously Kilmarnock that Casey was kind of talking about. Motherwell and Kilmarnock seem to be getting a lot more of the attention at the moment in terms of poor starts to the season, but people are kind of missing the fact that Livingston really don't look great at all. I mean, they get absolutely battered off Hibs earlier in the season. Obviously, they took points off Rangers, but Rangers really should have won that game, and I think 9 times out of 10 would go back and win that game. And now they're losing to a Hamilton Accies side that everybody, you know, doesn't, or nobody really fancies to do much this season. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I still think that they'll do enough to get themselves away from danger, but
you would
have hoped after the kind of poor start to the season that maybe the international break, they would have reset, looked at where they could improve, and then you surely would have thought they would have seen Hamilton at home as a massive opportunity to go and get 3 points, but they just didn't really show much at all, and it's just very surprising. I don't know whether a large part of that is to do with when you lose a player like Dykes, such a large focal point of the team, that's obviously bound to have an effect, but there's enough continuity there, and Gary Holt is a good manager that you'd be expecting a lot better from Livingston. So be interesting to see. Not entirely sure what the next few games for them kind of looks like, but you've got to imagine that they're going to have to start picking up points somewhere, or else they really could be in trouble.
Yeah, they go to Celtic Park on Saturday, so they'll probably struggle for points there. They've got St Johnstone at home and Dundee United away prior to the kind of League Cup stuff taking place. So, chance for them maybe after the Parkhead game to get some points on the board. They're second bottom. The only team below them is Motherwell, but they got their first win on Saturday, 1-0 over St Johnstone. It was Alan Campbell who struck after 4 minutes, his second goal in 2 games. He also got the winner for Scotland under-21s in their game against Lithuania the midweek prior to that. He's a player that's rated really highly. Kelly, have you seen much of him?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just about to come on to that because his finish for the 21s was different class as well. I actually caught the goal. It was a brilliant finish. And obviously, his goal on Saturday was more of the same. But I think he's been there or thereabouts now for a good couple of years. Obviously, Birrell and Andy know a lot more about him than me, but he's always impressed me. But I think the likes of Turnbull leaving is actually a good thing for him, because I think they know, well, obviously it's maybe, well, it'll be great for Motherwell fans because they want the best players, but this now his chance to be the kind of talisman, the driving force, and the one that everybody's talking about, because Turnbull took that away for a couple of seasons there with how impressive he's been. But Campbell, he's just got a bit of everything, totally box-to-box midfielder, which I really like, and it's quite rare now to find. But he's got that, he's got a bit of dig about him, man. He can go and win the ball, he's quite hardy, he can win tackles, but driving weight, and you've seen that with his goal, just driving, then bang, smacks it into the back of the net. So, no, I've been really impressed with him, and I think that's so far this season, it's been one of the only positives for Motherwell, has been his performances.
Defeat for St Johnstone, they're another team a bit like yourselves, Casey, that are just kind of, they look quite good, but they're maybe just not getting the results they deserve. They're conceding a lot of, I know the goal wasn't late at first part, but it seems like they're maybe conceding a lot of late goals, and they're losing a lot of games that they should maybe be drawing, or drawing a lot they should be winning. There's someone, I can't remember who it was, someone was in the paper for them saying that they could finish third this season.
Nah.
That good things were going on, so that they've clearly taken a wee
was
bit
of. Was it Tony Fitzpatrick, by any chance?
Yeah, that's the other Saints.
I know what you're saying, Hamish, but equally I've got to balance it out, man. I mean, they absolutely robbed us of 3 points that day, like genuinely. Oh, like,
I suppose.
Like, absolutely robbed us. So I suppose it comes around, but no. Again, it's a big season for another young player there as well. Obviously, the boy Ali McCann, who we talk about all day, and Callum Hendry as well, two good players. But I think that they will just do enough. Again, I wouldn't have been really concerned. Realistically, Motherwell should be beating them again if you want to go squad comparisons. And obviously, Callum Davidson, new manager, young manager, try to settle in a wee bit. But obviously, the interesting thing is all the fact that they're trying to play like 3-4-3, which I suppose is got to be given a bit of credit to try something different. But I don't know. I mean, they're a bit iffy. I've not seen a lot of them. I've really only seen them when they played us, and I did think that we were quite a difference, a better team than them. But then they came out with 3 points to me, didn't they?
Right, what else happened over the weekend? We had, obviously, a couple of big wins for the two Glasgow teams. Rangers put 4 past Dundee United, Celtic put 5 past Ross County. We'll probably touch on Celtic first. Saw this game logged into the old Ross County pay-per-view, which worked quite well, actually. It worked better than Celtic's TV does for the vast majority, although it did kind of cut out 5 minutes before kick-off and didn't come on until the second minute of the match. And the first thing I saw was Scott Brown giving a stupid pass away. So things were restored back to normality at that stage. But Celtic scored kind of soon after that. It was a daft penalty for, I think it was a boy Tilson, actually, that gave it away. I thought it was called Donaldson at first, but it turned out to be Tilson, who kind of pulled back in Edwards' arm.
Did you think it was a penalty, Hamish?
Aye.
See, when I've seen it back, I don't think it is, man.
Did you watch it in Sports Scene?
I've just caught it there, and it was a bit more clearer than I thought at the time. And he does tug him, but I'm a bit like... He gets down easy, but if it's one of them, if it's anywhere else in the park, then you do get a free kick for it. So you've got to carry that on. Well, if it's in the box, then why should that not still be a foul? But I think that he gets down far too easy. But the boy makes his own bed by having the contact. Aye. But I mean, you tug folk all the time. I mean
Edward does go down easy because there's no way a tug like that's forcing him to go to the ground. But they slowed it down in Sports Scene, Michael Stewart, and they did the wee magnifying glass, and you actually see the thing. I just think you can't do that. But it was a strange penalty as well from Edward, but or more strange for the goalkeeper, because he was just kind of standing. I don't know if he was wanting to avoid being panenka'd or something. But Edward kind of puts it away, and then Ross County, actually, they probably are leaving that game on Saturday night and wondering how they lost 5-0, because they had a lot of good chances. I think they hit the post twice through kind of free kicks. Ross Stewart has a really good chance at the start of the second half that Barkas saves. There's another one Barkas saved, I think it was for Stewart as well, at the back post in the first half. And County could honestly have had like 2 or 3 goals in that game. I mean, they might still have lost 5-3 or whatever, but they could have made more of a game of it. But I came away quite impressed. I thought we were slack in the first half, but as the second half went on, Lennon, I think, went through the team at half time, and as the second half went on, we were much better. And obviously, the subs that came on for us, I think, just showed the strength and depth we've got now. Like Ryan Christie came on, Turnbull came on, Klamala came on. Who's the other one? El Yunusi, who's like just playing and scoring for Norway the previous week, comes on as a sub. It just kind of tells you the strength and depth we've got at the club. So I kind of feel that we've maybe got over our wee wobble, hopefully. I mean, we might crash out of the Europa League to bloody whoever we're playing. I can't even remember who we've got, Latvian team. But I feel like Celtic are back on the track now, and I just thought it was a pretty comprehensive victory. County's defending left a lot to be desired, I thought, and I agree with you, Casey. I could see them dropping down the table a bit now. Like I liked them at the start of the season, but I think that they were going through a bit of a purple patch with I think they kept clean sheets in their first couple of games. Motherwell and someone else, Hamilton, I think. But I think now they're maybe going to go back to their old ways and start conceding goals by the bucket load.
But I think going forward, they've got a lot of firepower. Obviously, they've got Ollie Shaw, Gardine, Ross Stewart, who's a very good striker. And obviously, they're now missing Lee Irwin, who's a brilliant signing for...
That was a strange one, wasn't it? He went to St Mirren.
Aye, well, I think it was actually Fisher that was talking before we came on earlier that his contract got cancelled because he's for family reasons, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Not sure, obviously, could be anything, so don't want to speculate, but maybe he's just feeling a bit...
No, let's speculate.
Homesickness, maybe, for the... Just can he handle being... Can he stick clear away for the west coast of Scotland or something like that, perhaps?
Aye, well, I think it's Motherwell or whatever he's from, because like, he's definitely a local boy to the Arden. But I think he's a good signing for St Mirren, but we'll come on to that. Well, maybe come on to that later on or whatever. But no, I mean, what I'm saying is, County, I think even last season their defensive record was atrocious, to be honest.
They conceded more goals than any other team.
And I just don't... None of their defenders jump out to me that I would ever consider like to make a step up or somebody that I would take my own club.
I like left back, Josh Reid. I think he's talented, but centre backs, I'm a bit Cole Donaldson.
Aye, well, I mean, according to some, I mean, he's a cracking centre half as well. So I mean, I don't know what else we can really say there. But in their leaking goals again, as you said at the beginning of the season, they've done well to keep a couple of clean sheets, but they're absolutely leaking goals left, right, and centre. And but as you said, they'll be frustrated because I mean, they hit the post a couple of times and obviously what Barkas and stuff, but they just... You can't defend like that, and well, epitomised it was, and credit to Duffy, but I mean, the header there, I mean, it's so easy. It's as if almost as if it's a defensive header. I mean, if that's a long ball, Duffy knocks that away. He's only one way to win that ball every day of the week. It's Brown for his point of view to run in and just absolutely smash it home. But
smashed Julian out of the way, didn't he?
So I mean, obviously that's what Celtic have been missing. Well, that this is the Shane Duffy that everybody's been raving about before. I'd really ever seen him kick a ball. So, but I don't know. And obviously they switched off for the other corner for the Ayer goal as well. So that'll be. I mean, it's a long season, but that's what I said at the beginning. And when everybody was raving about Ross County, I said, well, we'll see where they are in a couple of games. And like I said, we've yet to see how they'll turn that around, because, as I said, they're starting to kind of slip down the table a wee bit now.
Fear amongst the Rangers support as your game was going on, as you saw Celtic battering in the goal?
No, to be honest, it's kind of to be expected after that wobble that Celtic would kind of come back, particularly after the international break, and try and start strongly. Did find it interesting. Obviously, I know Rodgers has now been away almost 2 years, but four of the five goals from set pieces isn't something that you would maybe associate. Maybe I'm wrong here, but you wouldn't associate with Celtic over recent years. But that's certainly the mark more of a Lennon team than Rodgers, which is to be expected. Certainly still feel, looking at it, I think Shane Duffy's a good signing, but still definitely feel that the Celtic are a wee bit susceptible at the back. Obviously, the more, if they continue with the three centre-halves they play together, then the better it'll become. But I think it was it looked very comfortable for Celtic. I know Barkas has had to make a couple of saves, but the game didn't really look in any doubt. And as we've kind of all said here, I think that's probably Celtic over their wee slump, and St Mirren getting into the game against them on Wednesday, not one as a title rival that I would be looking at and expecting Celtic to drop any points in either.
On to your own team then, four goals past Dundee United on Saturday, but the big headlines made by the absolute assault on poor Morelos.
I'll go through the rest before we get to that, because I've got a few words about that particular referee. But I actually thought the first couple of minutes Dundee United started not too badly, but as the game kind of went on, I thought Rangers, this was the first game we've played well in spells throughout this season so far, but this was the first game I thought overall you could see this team starting to click. I mean, the passing move for the first goal and then the skill from Kent was brilliant. I think the majority of Rangers fans and probably anybody that's watched a lot of Rangers this season is kind of noticing that Kent's really stepped up. He's starting to be the main man, whereas obviously the past couple of seasons it's been Morelos. Kent seems to have taken that mantle. Obviously, we don't know if Morelos is going to go or if he is going to stay, but Kent for me has been absolutely outstanding. Dundee United, I think, came back into it a little bit at the start of the second half. I mean, Nicky Clark probably should have scored with a header from a corner, but I mean, all the goals that we scored, I was really impressed by. Obviously, the Barisic ball, one fullback to the other for Tavernier, that was his 48th goal on his 250th appearance, which is actually a bit scary because it doesn't feel like that many, it doesn't feel like Tavernier's been at Rangers for the length that he has been. But I mean, for 48th goal for a right back's pretty impressive. I think that makes it 1 in 5 or something like that in terms of his goal record.
Quick maths.
Yeah, I know. I would love to say it was quick maths, but this is the benefits of research. You see, it's a professional pod we're doing here. But I thought we were comfortable. We looked good. I mean, even Arfield coming on, and he got the fourth as well, was really well deserved. A lot of energy in the midfield, and he's probably looking at that, obviously, the kind of situation in terms of injuries, and thinking that he's maybe get more of a chance to get more game time. And I think it's interesting that the first summer we've had Arfield, where he hasn't gone away with Canada, he looks a lot sharper, a lot fresher, and a lot more involved. Whereas certainly last season, it took him a couple of months to really get up to speed. And obviously, Roof has got his his second goal in three games, and I've been really impressed with him. But I don't want to obviously talk too much about Rangers, but I mean, Dundee United didn't really offer much. I thought Harks was maybe the best player. He had a couple of efforts.
Yeah, I like him, actually.
Yeah, I've been impressed with him. I mean, I've seen a couple of Dundee United games out with this one, and he's always looked pretty good to me. But just, as I say, just impressed with Rangers again. We've not conceded a goal. We're kind of just going about our business, comfortably beating teams, certainly at home so far. Obviously, we've dropped points to Livingston, but I think at this stage, as a Rangers fan, can't really ask for more. And obviously, it remains to be seen the kind of extent of the injuries that we picked up. It was kind of getting a bit farcical by the time, obviously, Morelos went off. But just really pleased with the result. And as I say, couldn't have really asked for a better start to the season.
Go on, get on about your Morelos stuff then. Get it off your chest.
Well, I'm struggling for words to describe it. I just don't know how Kevin Clancy can look at that and take away the fact that it's a red card, the fact that it's not even a yellow card, or if you want to even take that element out of it, the fact that it's not even a free kick. Looking at it, I mean, it's kind of, I've seen a lot of comparisons to, if you remember, Ryan Jack got sent off at Pittodrie for the challenge on Stevie May a couple of years ago, where he's passed the ball, but his studs have gone into the ankle. It's kind of similar to that. Edwards plays the ball, but I mean, his studs go right into Morelos' knee. Obviously, he has to get sent off, and I think we're trying to make a point in this podcast of trying not to get too bogged down, because there's so many discussions on how good or bad referees are in this country that it can be a bit mind-numbing. But Kevin Clancy is just a consistently terrible referee. Like, just bewildering calls in so many games, and not just ones involving Rangers, although I think he does seem to like's probably not the right word, but he seems to have an interesting relationship with Alfredo Morelos. But there's been plenty of other games I've seen him where he just seems to make bewildering calls, and I just see no way that, whether it's the compliance officer or whoever deals with that, can look at that performance on Saturday and think that he's suitable to be refereeing a top flight game.
You never hear of that compliance officer anymore. Yeah. What's he up to?
I think it's a woman.
Oh, no, it's a she, sorry. It's a she. Terrible. It's Claire White, I think her name is.
Yeah, she seems to have gone missing. What's she up to? I don't know. Should maybe get one of the listeners to find that out for us. But yeah, it's just bewildering, and I don't want to be one of those guys that's like, oh, there's a refereeing conspiracy or whatever, because I really genuinely don't believe that. But Kevin Clancy certainly tests my patience and a lot of other Rangers fans, the whole Rangers supports patience, and that on Saturday was just baffling to me. So
Fisher, see on it, right, and I'm not doing this to be just then devil's advocate, I thought he wound you up, right, because I've seen stills and I'm like, oh my god, it's a red card every day of the week, which it is, it totally is a red card, I'm never going to say it's not, but see, having seen it in real time, I can see why, I genuinely can see why the ref doesn't get in there, because it looks like he's played the ball. Obviously, the follow through comes up and it's a red card. It definitely is. And if it's slowed down, it's a red every day of the week. I'm no disputing that. But I can see why. And no Rangers player even appeals for it at the time. You obviously play the whistle, but it breaks out on the left, and I don't know if it's Barisic or whatever goes out. Kent's trying to press up the park. Nobody stops and looks for it. And obviously, with Ryan Jack, Stevie May hang, I remember that at the time, but that was all wrong. Stevie May was rolling about in the ground, and everybody was getting after
it. Aberdeen fans.
Aye, and exactly. But had there been a crowd there as well, that could have made it interesting. But I think at the time, everybody seems to play on, because it just looks like he's played the ball and he's come through it a bit. But when you slow it down, there's absolutely no doubt it's a red card. I'm never ever going to excuse that, and it's shocking when you see it. But in real time, when I do see it, I honestly can see how he does play on, because nobody appeals or anything. I'm not saying it should get to that, but it just looks like he plays the ball through and there's a wee bit of a follow through. But as I said, when you slow it down, there's absolutely no doubt it's a red card, and it's dangerous challenging, and he absolutely should see red for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make about the lack of appeals. I can't remember what game I was watching over the weekend, but one of the commentators was saying about a penalty claim and the players not claiming for it, and that almost being one of the reasons for the ref not giving it. And it's interesting nowadays that you've not got fans at games. There's almost an extra onus on players to claim for stuff, even more so than they normally do, because otherwise you've not got fans who are going to draw referees' attention. So maybe things like these do go a little bit unnoticed because there's not 50,000 Rangers fans there claiming it, as they obviously would have been on Saturday. Right, final game of the weekend, St Mirren 0, Hibernian 3. We can't talk about this game without talking about the prelude to it, which obviously was the fact that St Mirren effectively lost their three goalkeepers for this game. The statement came out, I think, both Jack Almuck and Dean Linus, their first and second choice goalkeepers, tested positive for COVID. They then had a third goalkeeper, I don't know exactly where he's from, Eastern Europe somewhere by looking at his name, he wasn't allowed to play the game because he'd obviously been in close proximity to the other two goalkeepers. Just a really strange situation. To make things even stranger, they sign Bobby Zamal from Hearts. I've not looked into this enough. Like, I'd love to know what Hearts are getting out of this. Like, why would they help out a team that have just effectively relegated them and were tweeting about heartbreakers and all that kind of stuff after Hearts went down? I know they were up against their rivals, Hibs, but I'd love to know what Hearts are getting out of it. Anyone get any clues?
No, I just maybe suppose that if with Gordon going back, there might be limited kind of opportunities for Zamal to get much game time. So they're thinking, well, if we loan him out, he's the number two, he comes back. Obviously, Gordon's got a bit of an up and down record with his fitness. If he goes out, gets some game time, Gordon maybe gets injured or perhaps isn't playing well, then he can come straight back in. But certainly on the evidence of his performance, and it's all the goals were certainly not his fault, but I don't think I'd be rushing to bring him back in if I was Hearts.
Crazy situation though, isn't it? I mean, like, just the way this was allowed to happen.
No, 100%, but on Hearts, it's just the other left way, because obviously they've given Colin Doyle on loan to us as well, who obviously we had to sign him on loan. So I don't know who their backup is to Craig Gordon now, because I just
as well they've not got any games, eh?
exactly. But no, it's funny you said that, because I know a couple of Hearts fans, I've seen a few Hearts fans on Twitter being like, why are we giving them? Because there obviously was the kind of obviously rivalry there and the way that kind of St Mirren behaved on social media in the lead up to Hearts' relegation. But as you said, I don't know what they get out of it unless it's just an agreement. The player wants to go and play. I'd assume, is it just like an emergency loan, like a 1 month deal or something like that?
Yeah.
It's probably just to go and get game time, because I mean, they're no, obviously it is to the benefit of St Mirren, but I mean, Hearts only need them to know anyway. Player goes out, plays games, comes back sharp. I don't know. I think that's the only explanation there can be for letting them go.
Just a crazy situation. So much sympathy for Jim Goodwin. He came out and completely blasted the governing bodies for making this game happen, and I just can't believe that they did. St Mirren literally don't have a goalkeeper to play in the game, and I just found it an absolute shambles that they didn't just call this game off. I get one of the points of view that it would set a precedent if they did call it off, and then maybe further down the line, say before a Celtic Rangers match, Celtic or Rangers have three centre mids out or something like that with COVID, do they then postpone that game? I get that it set a precedent. I fear it sets a precedent, but it's just crazy for me that the game was allowed to happen, and so much sympathy for Jim Goodwin, and obviously the result wouldn't have made him feel any better either. A big win for Hibernian, really comfortable, a couple of really dodgy handballs in the game as well, which probably made Jim Goodwin feel even worse. I think it was Porteous who should have given away a penalty for that would have gone to St Mirren, and also Martin Boyle's goal should have been ruled out for handball. So just a really dire, you know, few days for St Mirren all round, Fisher.
Yeah, I mean, just obviously we were discussing referees when we were talking about the Rangers game. How that penalty doesn't get given against Porteous is beyond me as well. I think it was Willie Colm that was the referee for
that's
that one.
Amazing.
It's just unbelievable.
How guilty did Porteous look?
I know, because he keeps looking at the ref, because the camera zooms into him and he looks at the ref about three or four times as if, right, this, you're giving that, surely. And then I think it's either going out for a throw-in or for a corner. But I mean, as you mentioned, it is really tough on St Mirren. I think the reason it maybe went ahead, and again, just kind of listening to Off the Ball as I was driving on Saturday, when they had Jason Leach on, he praised St Mirren. He said that they followed the guidelines to a T, and that they did everything in the safest way possible. So, I mean, firstly, credit for them for that, but that's maybe kind of worked against them in the sense of because they followed all the guidelines so exactly and so well that obviously there wasn't any risk to the rest of the playing staff and to Hibs as well, so that's perhaps why. I mean, St Mirren were just really poor. They kind of looked like a team that were beaten before the game kind of even really got going. I mean, the Dermis free kick and then the chance for Nathan Sheeran just after it was kind of as good as it got for them. But I still have been impressed by what I've seen with St Mirren. Kind of by Ross County, they started maybe a wee bit better than people had anticipated, and they've kind of regressed a little bit, I suppose. But I still think they'll be all right Hibs are just, again, it's going to be a real fight between Hibs and Aberdeen for third spot. Hibs are maybe the more attractive team in terms of they're maybe better to watch. And Aberdeen, they've got some really, really good players. I mean, the finish from Mule for the second goal was a really, really good finish. But yeah, just a shame for St Mirren, but Hibs, that Aberdeen game apart have really impressed me. And as I say, it should be a really exciting finish, I think. Don't want to do any of them, Hibs or Aberdeen, a disservice because it's still early in the season. But if things go as I think everybody expects them to be, obviously Rangers and Celtic competing for the title, Hibs Aberdeen for third could be a really, really interesting battle.
Right. Fantasy football time. Kenny Gardner, congratulations. You're the new leader of the 802 strong Burst Ball League. 74 points, game week 7. Worth pointing out that St Mirren Celtic still to come in this game week, but it makes sense to go over the table now. So well done, Kenny. You're top on a total of 452. Scary looking at that. I'm in 269, so he's almost doubled my points tally after how many weeks is that? 6 or something? Mark Stevenson and Craig Dallas make up the rest of the top three. So exciting stuff there. A few kind of European games on Thursday night. Just very quickly, guys, without actually talking about how we think the games will go. Motherwell are away at Coleraine. Rangers are away at Lincoln Red Imps. And Aberdeen, as we said, are away at Viking. How are those three going to get on, Casey? Are they going to go through or are they going to go out?
Be hopeful that the all three teams can progress, but I mean obviously the fact that all teams are away is obviously a bit of a concern and special one off games, but I do think I think there's no doubt Rangers will be in the next round, and obviously the Aberdeen and Motherwell games are the kind of tricky ones there.
I think all three will go through. I genuinely believe that.
I think I'm confident that Rangers will go through. That will come back to haunt me, no doubt. I think Aberdeen will do. I do think Aberdeen will go through. Motherwell, the one I'm kind of worried about, I must admit.
Oren Kearney's team. Yeah. Knocked Maribor out in the last round.
Well, exactly. Yeah, which is a really impressive result. Motherwell would be the one that I'm worried about, but I am as confident as I can be that Rangers and Aberdeen will go through. But as I say, Motherwell, I'm slightly concerned over.
Graeme Spears has got a new podcast out, and he's launched it in Patreon. That seems like a really good idea, guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're wanting somebody to listen to your brand new content, I suppose the best way for you to do that is to put it behind a paywall, essentially. yeah, bit of a baffling decision, that one.
I was chatting to someone that actually paid the money, because yes, someone did actually decide to pay the money, and that person was saying that the audio quality is pretty poor for it. So
I was actually going to ask that, Hamish, but I just can't have it in my head, like, Spears sitting editing something and like
sitting, you know, with the wee putting the faders up and all that.
I have sort of no chance.
Maybe sitting with his mum.
Well, was his mum's doing the ironing, and Spears producing this great content. But I think I'm actually just going to sign up myself just to see what I'm missing, really. It's ridiculous as Graeme Spears is, I do find him quite interesting at times. I know that the majority of people do not seem to like them anymore, and we kind of had a discussion about that. It seems to be that in this country we've got a real distrust for the media, but more so in Scotland, the sports media. I think that just nobody has any faith left in it, and it's quite sad to see. But I mean, can you really blame a lot of the people for it? I mean, it seems to be most journalists have kind of lost a hell of a lot of credibility. But I mean, that's just me speculating. I don't know if that's the feelings across the board, but I mean, when you compare it to other countries, and it just doesn't feel like we've got that.
I know. I mean, that's what happens when they report about the same sectarianism for 30 years. Folk get a bit fed up and turn off, and probably don't want to pay money for podcasts when they can get wonderful shows like this for free, and they can pay for other, you know, fan produced content. Like, loads of clubs now have got fans producing content, and they will charge for it. But it'll be additional stuff they charge for. They won't start the podcast in Patreon. But anyway, we wish Graeme Spears all the best going forward, and hopefully it doesn't take too much, too many listeners away from this wonderful show, because they're thinning the ground as we are at the moment. But thank you very much, Callum Scott. Appreciate your time.
I was delighted to be back, Hamish. So thanks for having me again.
And Fisher, thanks for making up the Holy Trinity, we'll call us three.
Nice one, mate. Glad to be back. Glad that we had a wee bit more of a positive podcast this week, and looking forward to talking with you again soon.
Definitely, we'll be back this time next week, looking back on all the weekend stuff. Hopefully, loads and loads to discuss there. Don't know who'll join me, but I guess we'll find that out neither the time. Until next time, take care, and we'll speak to you soon.